Boy, it's such a big room, and there's so few people in it, and everybody, no offense, looks pretty tired. All right? Has it been that long of a conference? I'm going to do my best to, you know, kind of shake things up just a little bit to try to hold people's attention on these weary days as we're waiting to get out there, or waning hours as we're waiting to get out there to the parade. A few disclaimers. First of all, I need to point out that this work was done largely while I was still associated with Wake Forest School of Medicine. Health Partners Research Foundation, which is located up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, was responsible for all of the data collection activities that you're going to see in the upcoming slides. Of course, I need to make sure that kudos gets made to those places who gives us the money to be able to do the things that we want to do. And I also need to report that there are no conflicts of interest or disclosures that need to be made. Now, I got a little carried away with some of this animation, so I'm just going to put it all up at the same time. Let me just sort of provide the general framework. In a previous life, I did worksite health promotion and wellness. And when I say in a previous life, that was like back in the early to mid-80s and into the early 90s. And there the mantra was essentially, if you give them a t-shirt, they will come. The whole point was fundamentally that of motivation, that people lack sufficient motivation to do the things that we're asking for. And to a certain degree, that mantra holds through today. However, there's some increasing evidence, both theoretical and empirical, that suggests that, you know what? Sometimes people have a difficult time getting to the gym, doing the diet programs, whatever else it is, despite their best intentions. As a matter of fact, when I did worksite health promotion, I can vividly recall concrete examples of people who had what I then proclaimed were good excuses to not go to the gym, but they frequently rotated around the fact of, you know what, Joe, I'd love to go to the fitness center after work, but if I'm more than 15 minutes late picking up my kids, they charge me an extra $5 for every 15 minutes that I'm there. So I use that to illustrate the point that sometimes there's very concrete things that are stand in people's best way. But one of the things that worksite health promotion has frequently failed to acknowledge is the way that the jobs themselves are organized may stand in the way of people being able to participate in health promotion programs. In this particular presentation, I'm focusing primarily on physical activity. And if we take a close look at several theoretical models, including the demands control model, the effort reward imbalance models, we see that there's good reason to believe that if the way jobs are designed, such as in the amount of control that individuals have over their jobs, and more specifically, the amount of control that individuals have over their work time, we see that there's good reason to imagine that the way those jobs are organized may, in fact, shape their ability to participate in physical activity. There's also a little bit of research that's out there that's starting to take a peek at, well, what does it mean if you have a flexible work arrangement? Does that help, and by flexible I mean schedule flexibility, does that help promote regular physical activity? There are a handful of studies, probably two or three, that support that notion despite the long-standing belief that workplace flexibility is fundamental to successful worksite health promotion. The last point that's on this slide is really coming out of a relatively recent movement that sort of speaks to the point of differential exposure and vulnerability as far as the creation of occupational health disparities. And here the fundamental point is that issues like control and schedule flexibility are likely to be disproportionately distributed to individuals in the upper ranks of the occupational hierarchy, whereas individuals at the lower ranks may very well be the ones who are most likely to need that flexibility and that control. And so the overall goal of this particular study was to improve understanding of job design and its implications for workers' physical activity. In order to accomplish that goal, I sought two particular aims. The first one is to document associations of selected indicators of job design, that is, job control and schedule flexibility or schedule control, with physical activity, and then to delineate educational and racial variability in these associations. So the data for this paper come from a larger project that's essentially focused on women's work-family balance and its implications for physical activity and diet. It's a prospective cohort design where we recruited individuals and we collected repeated measures assessments every 4 months for 1 year. The inclusion criteria to be in this particular study was you had to be a female of at least 18 years of age, You had to be self-reported white or black. We did exclude Asians and Latinos because we were fundamentally interested in differences between whites and African Americans. You had to be working at least 35 hours per week, and then you had to have a child at least of the ages of 4 to 9. The justification for some of those criteria is that we were really interested in how combining work and family may create forced choices for women to engage in regular physical activity. We focused on 4 to 9 because it essentially captures a transition period where kids may be going from essentially structured daycare into school arrangements or from one type of school into another depending on the age of their children. So we're trying to capture some of that variability. Our main dependent variable was physical activity, and we collected physical activity using a pedometer, the picture that you see that's up there. The benefit of this particular device is that it would maintain the most recent 7 days of physical activity that women are engaging in at the time of the interview. So essentially before each interview, we sent, before the baseline interview, we sent the pedometer out about a week ahead of time before we collected baseline data. And then about 10 days before each of the subsequent telephone-based interviews, we reminded them to put the pedometer back on. And so we had 7 days of step data that then coincided with the look-back period of the self-reported interviewer-administered survey questionnaires about the things that were going on in their daily work and family lives. The main predictors of interest in this particular paper are about job design, and it's important to know that job design was assessed at the baseline interview. So these are questions that essentially get at how much control you have over your job. So you can imagine the classic Karasek and Thorell job content questionnaire. They're questions like, overall, how much say do you have in the type of work that you do on your job? Overall, how much control do you have over where your work is performed? Those kinds of questions. Then we also had a 7-item schedule control measure that basically asked how much control do you have over when you work, over when you take vacation, over how long you take breaks, those kinds of things. So those were measured at the baseline survey, and they were used to essentially predict physical activity across the subsequent year. Race was based on self-reported identity, and then educational attainment was classified into low versus high, and you see the classifications there. So I was hoping, and it looks as though hopefully that you can see it back there, but these, of course, are the descriptive statistics. I'm not really going to spend too much time talking about this, apart from this is a typical sample of working women. We see that you know, by design, they had to be working at least 35 hours per week, but on average, they were working about 42 hours per week. You see that there's a mixture of families with young children, both young and school-age children, and you can see that there's good variability in terms of age and some other characteristics. So let's take a look first at some of the main points of interest. This slide is really busy because, again, these data were collected in Minnesota, so we had to adjust for seasonal variation in physical activity. But the first thing that I want to point out is what is the substance of this particular paper, and that is if you take a look at the job design items, here we're predicting average steps over the course of the subsequent year, and individuals who have greater job control have more steps per day than individuals with less job control. Interestingly, though, if we take a look at schedule control, we see that those women who have greater levels of schedule control are engaging in fewer steps per day, and I'll have some things to say about that in just a few minutes. The other things that I want to point out in this particular slide, though, is that there's a wide number of interaction terms. And what I want to draw your attention to in particular is the difference in steps per day by race and education. The fundamental point that you see in this particular slide is that regardless of education, African Americans have less steps per day than whites. However, we see that there's a notable difference between high education and low education whites with regard to the number of steps taken per day. So this interaction was something that we had to take into account through the remaining analyses that were done in this particular paper. Now, this is a really hairy slide, and let me talk you through it rather than having you look at the pictures. So you recall that we have an interaction effect that first of all says that that the association between educational attainment and physical activity fundamentally differs for blacks and whites. So that's the first thing to recall. The second thing to recall is that there's a main effect for both job control and schedule control on physical activity. So in essence, what we have is the potential for some mediated moderation, and that makes my head hurt just simply trying to think about it. So what this table fundamentally reflects are the indirect effects that are seen through the different groups of individuals. And so on the top panel, you see the indirect effects for job control, race through physical activity by job control. And the point that you see there is that there is, in fact, an indirect association between race and physical activity among low education women only, such that there is there's a modest amount of mediation for those women. Likewise, in the bottom panel, though, recall that schedule control was inversely associated with physical activity. And here we see that there's actually a protective effect. The fact that black women generally have lower levels of schedule control tends to protect them from reductions in physical activity. So the strengths and limitations of this study is, first of all, there's a prospective cohort design. We had racially and educationally diverse sample. We did multiple assessments of physical activity, essentially one week every 3 or 4 months. And then we also had objective assessments of physical activity. The limitations, though, of course, is that the sample is restricted to women, working women with young children, that it was in a specific geographic area, and the sample was relatively small. And you saw that in relatively large standard error terms. So therefore, the results that you see in these particular results should be interpreted with some level of caution. Nevertheless, the main conclusions can be taken from this particular study is that job design, in fact, does seem to predict variation in women's physical activity. Greater job control predicts more physical activity, which has been seen in two other papers, but this is the first time we see it prospectively and with objective assessments of physical activity. However, greater schedule control predicted less physical activity, and there's a small but growing literature that seems to suggest that when women are given schedule control, what do they use that time for? To fit more in, not necessarily for greater self-care. And so that's how we're interpreting this particular association, is that when women receive receive greater schedule control, they're using that time to essentially fit in kids' appointments, to see to it that they can get to school activities and that sort of thing. They're not, unlike their male counterparts, using it for self-care like leisure time physical activity. So that's our interpretation. Next, differences in job design explain a small amount of racial differences in physical activity, particularly among low education women. And lastly, job design may play a role in reinforcing racial differences in physical activity disparities. I didn't create an implication slide because, again, you know, this is sort of basic science, not quite ready for implications. But in my mind, again, coming off of roughly 20 years of worksite health promotion, this sends, I think, an important signal to the point of when we're out there trying to get people to engage in regular physical activity, we need to recognize that sometimes the barriers that stand in the place are not people's appraisals of how busy they are or whether or not they think they have enough time. In fact, there are structural barriers in place that in the spirit of an effective worksite health promotion program, we need to look at the jobs and the way those jobs are designed before we try to encourage and or motivate people to engage in more physical activity. Thank you.